we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theater, visit their website at www.riotheater.ca.
It could be global, trance, spoken word, rock, the usual and the weird, or it could be something different. Oral Tentacles, Thursdays 12 to 6 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
Hearing your band playing on and on and on. Gosh, so loud.
Man, I wish we had a safe place to play music.
Yeah, and shows too.
The Safe Amplification Site Society is a non-profit group dedicated to establishing a legal, affordable, all-ages venue for music and arts in Vancouver. For more information or to get involved, check out www.safeamp.org.
Fate, sex, God, everyone has a secret. In a series of tantalizing vignettes, over 100 characters search for love and information.
They discover themselves and each other through tango, torture, and karaoke.
UBC Theatre and Film presents Love and Information.
Written by influential and award-winning playwright Carol Churchill.
And directed by MFA candidate Lauren Taylor.
For tickets, visit theaterfilm.ubc.ca.
Hello, hello, hello. You're listening to the CITR 101.9 FM from unceded Musqueam territory at UBC Vancouver. My name is Simon Welton, and coming up in the next half hour is, as always, the White Noise Show. That's a half hour of sketch comedy, followed by the White Noise After Show. This week hosted by myself and joined by Connor Neckleput and Sierra Wiley. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. Thanks, Simon. You?
Not bad. A little sleep deprived, but that's nothing new.
Working hard on those New Year's resolutions, I see.
Sleepless.
Yeah, trying to get that sleep pattern sorted, but oh well. It's all for a good cause. It was editing this show, and we've got also coming up in the next 24 hours is the 24 hours of student power. And so we're going to be premiering a play I wrote called The Trip about DMT. I don't know exactly when it goes on tomorrow. I think it might be late in the night, but we might probably play it again next week. And it'll definitely be up for podcast on CITR.ca. And so I'll post a link on the Facebook page, which is White Noise UBC, and the Twitter feed, which is White Noise YVR, if you want to check that out. It's pretty cool. It's like an hour-long sort of comedy about DMT. And there's actually a lot of information about the drug in there. So if you are curious even just about what DMT is all about, it might be a good source for you. So check it out. Anyway, in the meantime, though, we're going to do the White Noise Show. So enjoy this one. Oh, yeah. Helps if I turn that on.
Here we go. Warning. The following programming contains adult subject matter and some strong language. It is a work of satirical fiction. All characters and advertisements are completely fabricated. Listener discretion is advised.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of What? I'm your host, Richard Blackmore, and tonight's episode is brought to you in part by food trucks, because the best food is sold out the back of a van. First up tonight, people are arguing.
I saw her first.
No, you didn't. I introduced you to her.
Did not. I sent you that email with her picture, the one where she's doing homework in a thong.
And you got it from Billy, who got it from me.
Whatever, dude. She doesn't even like you.
She does, too. We spent ages last night discussing Wordsworth.
Yeah, I was there. She thought you meant Chris Hemsworth.
Oh, that explains why I couldn't find the Wordsworth poem she mentioned called Age of Ultron.
Yeah, she's way more into stuff I like motocross. I can tell by how much she was nodding last night. She was, like, totally enthralled.
Or maybe she's just pretending.
Wow, you are so cynical, dude. Honestly, wow. So, like, how are we gonna solve this?
Why don't we just share?
Share? Fine. We'll just both pay, and we'll share a private webcam show.
Yeah.
I don't like webcams. It's not realistic sex when she doesn't have a look of disgust. Next up tonight, someone's trying to save the world.
"20 seconds, Dan.
Okay.
No caps locks or French keyboards this time?
No, I'm not an idiot.
10 seconds.
Why don't we ever allocate more time for these?
5 seconds.
Shit.
1 second.
Done!
For fuck's sake.
Oh, did you want me to turn that valve off or on?
I'd never fight cybercrime. I'm too scared of programmers. Next up tonight, someone's getting fired.
So, Greg, you've been working at the dispensary for 2 months now. How do you think it's been going?
Well, I've sold a lot of weed, got on well with the customers, only dribbled on myself once.
Is there anything you think you could improve upon?
I sometimes stare at women's cleavage too long.
No, something work-related.
That is work-related.
Okay, but there's something else I had in mind, something quite glaring.
My eyes?
No, I don't mean literally. Something you don't do enough of.
Oh, right. You think I should wipe better?
No, what? What I'm trying to say is, Greg, at work you need to get more stoned.
Pardon?
Some of the customers have been complaining that you're far too intelligible, clear, and productive. You're making them feel inadequate. If you can't get down to their level, how can you possibly not make them feel bad?
So you're saying me being sober makes the stoners feel bad?
Exactly. They don't need you swanning around, remembering what you did yesterday, and trying to engage them in complex conversations about politics. Stick to what kind of weed it is and stories from times you got super high.
But I know plenty of high-functioning stoners who can smoke weed and hold a conversation.
Sure, but for every one of those, we have 30 day laborers who think that Kafka is a kind of coffee.
Fine, so I'll smoke a joint or two more during my shift.
No, that won't do. We are talking dabs hourly.
No way!
Hey, it's for your benefit, too. Suddenly, operating a cash register is a challenge. It'll make your job seem so much more fulfilling.
Well, I do like working here, so if it will help.
Great! Now, can you pop over to the other store and open up? Everyone else forgot to come into work.
I tried weed once. I think it was dandelion. Next up tonight, someone's being guided.
Okay, Alice. So, I've been looking over your grades and your extracurriculars.
Did they include my volunteer work?
Yeah, I don't think it counts if you volunteered for Girls Gone Wild.
No, this is my big sister's t-shirt. I mean my singing.
But you wrote down you only do it in the shower.
Well, it's better for the acoustics.
Well, I don't think it's going to add much weight to my advice. Did you have anything in mind already for what sort of career you'd like to have?
Well, I was thinking something in the arts. You know, like maybe a YouTube star.
That's not a proper job.
They earn more than a guidance counselor.
Well, yes, everyone earns more than a guidance counselor. Any other ideas?
An Instagram star.
Try again.
Porn star?
All right, anything not involving the word star.
Ooh, how about one of those people who balances on ropes between trees?
Slacklining?
That's it! Slacking!
Yeah, not a very profitable option.
People in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
You want to work in a greenhouse?
Look, I thought you were meant to give me suggestions.
Well, I've put all your data into this software, which will one day completely replace my job, and what it suggests you do is to start a biochem degree. Realize it's too hard, switch to a humanities degree, finish it, have an existential crisis, and then go into marketing.
Ugh, you sound just like my dad.
I never went to university. I applied to loads, but I didn't even get accepted to Trump University. Next up tonight, Carl and Neil are back.
Oh, it's you.
So, this is where you're working now.
Yeah, so what? This is the best sex shop in town.
Oh, no, my photo's still on the wall of shame. So what do you do all day?
Well, I ring up purchases, wipe down the peep show booths, and unplug the toilet.
Ah, oh, you have to unplug other people's poos.
Oh, nah, it's a staff toilet. Just mine.
And how much they paying you?
Well, it's about £5 an hour, under the table.
Why is it under the table?
Well, I think because the boss has short arms and can't reach over the table.
Well, how would you like to earn double that?
How?
Well, you tell me the combination to the safe, and I'll give you a £10 note.
Oh, no way, Neil. I need this job. I've gotten used to my new lifestyle. I eat 2 meals a day of cat food. I live in my own kennel. And I drink Earl Grey tea.
Wow. I barely recognise you, Carl. What happened to the kid I used to know? The one who would drink a car battery for a fiver? Who would dive headfirst into a wall because I told him to? The guy who was always there when I needed someone to punch?
He's gone, Neil. This is Carl 2.0. Stronger, faster, and a shinier coat. Because of the extra cat food.
Wow, you're really gone, eh? No more Neil and Carl?
Well, we could still be friends. Just not friends in an abusive relationship.
But then what's the point?
Well, we could do nice things like hang out. Or go to the park. Or spit at cars.
That's just not the sort of relationship I'm looking for.
Well, then I guess this is goodbye.
No, Carl, please don't do this to me.
Oi, excuse me. Someone nutted all over the city in the peep show number one.
Oh, give us a minute, mate. Look, Neil, we've grown apart. Like my mum's legs.
Please, Carl. I'll give you whatever you want. Just don't leave me.
Hey, I expect better service than this. It's 2 PM and I have a lot of other options for peep shows.
Piss off, you lowly pervert.
Oh, I might be a pervert. But I am online dating.
You want some, do ya?
Oh, come on then, I'll have you.
No, Neil. Think about your lovely face.
Wow, I sold it.
Have some of this.
Ow, that's my good nose.
And this.
Oh, I didn't think there'd be actual punching.
Neil, you want some of this, soft lad? Have some of this.
Oh, my ear, you're fucking dicing me.
Nice one, retro attack.
I'm telling on you.
Wow, thanks, Carl.
No problem. Just because we're not hanging out anymore doesn't mean I still won't bite someone's ear off for you.
I know. Well, I guess I better be going.
Oh, hang on. Hello?
Hi.
Oh, hi, boss man. What's up? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, makes sense. Oh, fair enough. Yeah, cheers anyway.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Everything okay?
Yeah, I'm fired.
Shit, did he see the ear-biting thing on the cameras?
Oh, no, he just noticed I nicked all the profits.
Oh, right. So what now?
Well, is there still room in that dumpster for two?
No, but I could use you as a pillow.
Yay!
I've spent a lot of time in sex shops. Certainly far more time than I've actually ever spent having sex. Next up tonight, Trump is back.
"10 minutes before your lunch meeting with the KKK, Mr. Trump."
"What's on the menu?"
"It's Jamaican beef patties and Creole jambalaya."
They're not gonna like that.
Can we change it to tacos? No, wait. Better make it clam chowder. They can't get pissed at that.
Right away, sir.
What to do? What to do? Let's see who I haven't pissed off yet. I pissed off the blacks, the Mexicans, the gays, the Jews, the poor, the disabled, the FBI, anyone with taste. Ooh, the Asians. No, wait. There was a Taiwan thing, and them referring to them as all as Asians thing. The Dutch! I haven't pissed off the Dutch yet. Okay, let me see. How about the Netherlands? Only good for drugs and prostitutes. Sad. No, two on the nose. Come on, Donald, you're better than this. Maybe the Netherlands. Global warming is gonna drown you first. Nope, can't let them know I understand climate change. Okay, then the Netherlands. Go fuck yourself. There, perfect.
I don't hate Trump. I hate everything about him. Next up tonight, Women Are Talking.
I am so going to Coachella this year.
Oh my god, that is so last year.
What?
It's so mainstream now. I'm going to a much more exclusive members-only show, Coscoachella.
OMG, that sounds amazing!
Actually, it's part of a festival tour I'm doing. Yeah, I'm taking a lot of time off work, but it's important to just, like, get away and recharge and connect with yourself. I mean, working at Starbucks is almost like a full-time job.
Totally.
So after Coscoachella, I'm heading to France for Goatcella.
Is that, like, the one run by Jean-Paul Gaultier?
No, it's the one run by goats.
I love it. So organic.
And then finally, I'm going to Pokemon Go-chella.
Oh, wow. So it's like all Pokemon themed?
Yeah, I don't know, but I'll just go to anything with Chella in the name.
I have zero interest in going to Coachella. My favorite band never plays there. They're too niche. Only the cool kids listen to the Wiggles. Next up tonight, someone's arguing.
Excuse me, but you can't wear that.
Pardon?
That's cultural appropriation.
What is?
Your headdress.
You mean my beret?
Yeah, you're not French.
I know, I just like the way it looks.
But you weren't born within the arbitrarily drawn borders of where that piece of clothing originated?
So I'm only allowed to wear clothes that were designed in Canada?
No, only the ones designed by other Anglo-Saxon designers, as long as they didn't get their inspiration from other non-Anglo-Saxon settlers.
Right. Do you not see how these suggestions completely ignore the fluidity of culture over time?
Leave the cultures alone!
Why?
Because it makes them feel bad.
Well, I think they'd let it go if you sorted out the systemic inequality.
Well, that would take ages. This is something we can get angry about today on Twitter.
All right, sure. Well, anyways, I have to go to class now.
Ooh, are you also taking the hip-hop and jazz class?
I've found a great way to not offend people of other races by simply not talking to them. Next up tonight, someone's getting divorced.
We have to work out these details eventually, Karen. We are getting divorced.
I know.
Let's just go through the list.
Okay.
The car.
Well, I can't drive, so I should have it so I can learn.
But I need it for work.
You can deliver pizza on a bike, Pete.
You know what? Let's come back to that. The house.
Well, obviously that's mine. I chose it.
Well, I paid the down payment.
I let you have sex with me for 10 years.
Fine. You keep it. All right, the secret bank account in Geneva.
What?
Never mind. Anything else major?
Don't think so.
Well, that's fine then. Oh! Shit, the kids.
Oh, right. Yes, them.
Well, are they gonna live with me or you?
Well, I got the house and car, so you should probably have the kids.
Nah, excuse me. How is that fair?
I promise you can see the car on the weekends.
I thought getting a divorce meant I got to be single again.
So did I.
Is there any way neither of us can have the kids?
Do fire halls still let you leave kids on the doorstep?
Not when they're 16.
Boarding school?
Nah, I'm not paying to send them to a snowboarding school.
No, a school where they only come home on the holidays.
Like Hogwarts.
Yes, but the only mystery is who's going to be molested in the night.
Sounds character building. You know what? Agreed. They'll attend Hogwarts.
I wish I'd gone to boarding school as a kid. I'm naturally very good at looking down on other people. That's the end of our show. Join us again for more White Noise.
White Noise was written and directed by Simon Welton, featuring the voice talent of Caitlin Docking, Connor Neckleput, Sierra Wiley, Nick Rinker, Kenneth Tynan, and Simon Welton.
All right, there you go. That was the White Noise Show. I hope you enjoyed that sketch comedy. We'll have more sketch comedy next week. I just found out exactly when we're going on the air for the trip. It's going to be 3 a.m. tomorrow night. It's when it's going, so you definitely want to check it out live.
3 a.m. tomorrow night, as in like 5 hours.
No, actually, as in like 28 hours.
Okay.
Yeah.
So night,
yeah. Sorry, I should have clarified that. But yeah. So we'll definitely podcast it though. So yeah, just check it out on our Facebook, White Noise UBC, or Twitter, White Noise YVR, or you could listen to it live if you're just, you know, having some insomnia and want to listen to a trippy play.
Or you're a truck driver, just on the hall.
All the truck drivers, yeah.
It seems like a pretty good sketch for 3 a.m. or show.
Yeah, I think the time slot's fair enough. But we are going to do right now the White Noise after show. It's a half hour, a chit chat about current events and also themes within our show that we've just done. And we're also going to play some kick-ass music. So let's not beat around the bush. This is TV Sets, and this is In Wait.
Let's take that. just a trick of the light. Keeps us here. In the blink of an eye, love is there. Maggie's home for the holidays. She don't smoke around her dad. And if she leaves a man, it won't be for me, she said.
There you go. That was Entire Cities with When the Sun Goes Down from Rock Chapel. And before that was TV Sets in Wait, which is off these rifle years. Interesting title. All right, guys. So first topic for tonight. Should we start with something from the show or should we start something from politics? What do you think? Any preference?
Politics. Politics.
All right. Then we'll go straight to it. So... the new president's had a busy week, and so is his press secretary. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of signing of documents, executive orders, 12 to be exact, each more disturbing than the next. So where should we start?
Well, I'm starting to wonder if the world is just like a huge Onion article, or if we're in 1984, or like what's going on here, because it just seems like it's satire, and then I realize that it's from a legitimate news source, and it's not just alternate facts.
Yeah.
And I'm just...
What the fuck is that about?
Oh, it's mad.
Alternate facts. That is bizarre language choice.
Yeah, and like for so long, perhaps it's because like I'm in a privileged position, and you know, I live in Canada, and I can feel distant from it, it's kind of felt like it's not really real that, oh, this guy maybe was elected. Yeah, but it's not going to be as bad as they say. It's not going to be that bad, even though I hated the fact that he was elected. And then it's like, as you hear more and he like comes out with more executive orders and more things go into the news, I'm just like getting more and more scared because it's just like this actualization of all this fear. And
the trouble is, though, and not to refute any of that, I am absolutely in the same accord and agreement that it's kind of scary. A lot of what we're seeing is just headlines that are sensationalizing things, and not necessarily out of context, but it's always worth digging deeper as well and saying, well, what did Obama do when he was inaugurated in 2009? And like, is there precedence being broken? Is it just like what the president does when he gets?
Yeah, I mean, we know like the one that is like a guarantee when a Republican gets into power is the revoking funding for safe access to... care for pregnant women. That's like overseas funding to poor areas, like to do with birth control and things like that. And they always revoke it every time. So
and then the Democrats always reinstate it.
Yeah, which is. Yeah.
Which doesn't seem like a Donald Trump move as much as just like, oh, that's the way things, it sucks now to be women a bit, especially if you're relying on the US for the next couple of years. Although it seems that the Netherlands have just gone, well, we'll do it then, which is kind of nice of them.
Which is great.
Yeah, I think it's quite promising to see the potential for how other countries can band together and unite a bit with this imminent threat that is Donald Trump as president, because you're starting to see that response. Like, you're seeing it in the Netherlands, you're seeing in Canada and the European Union moving closer to CETA, and perhaps, you know, because now America's, you know, permanently pulled, well, not permanently, but for the time being is pulled out of TPP, you know, perhaps the rest of the countries will go, okay, well, you know, we can have this like sort of alternate trading block and some sort of a buffer against the US.
Well, it's funny. It's almost like, you know, in Watchmen, where you have Dr. Manhattan, who intentionally becomes like evil, like the evil bad guy that they can all blame so that they all band together. So, no, and that's definitely not what's going on, but it's a nice thought.
It seems pretty plausible.
One executive order, which doesn't actually, I would argue, is a good thing, is he's written an executive order demanding, well, like trying to demand that all pipeline projects in the U.S. use U.S.-made steel so that people aren't buying cheap steel from China, which, yeah, I mean, that's, to be fair, if it's for your infrastructure and you can afford to do it, you should prop up your own sort of economy in that sense, because they do have huge steel manufacturing still there. So why the hell, why are they using cheap Chinese steel? That does seem,
because it's cheap.
Well, yeah, but it doesn't seem to, you know, you should try and look after your own economy if you're, especially if the government spending money, then definitely, but
yeah. Well, I mean, the argument is it's cheap for someone, therefore for someone else, it's like the consumer, or there's another level at which someone else is making more money, which allows them to reinvest. Hopefully, the theory is it allows them to reinvest into other sectors and other people's jobs. And whether it works out or not is the big question mark, and it often seems like it doesn't.
Totally.
I guess of everything, that's not very controversial at all. I mean, even I'm like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Either you're going to go off in a direction of like, oh yeah, I know, at least he's like signed off on these pipelines. And I was going to be like, I'm going to cut you off there.
But yeah, I was going to say, but let's get to the more disturbing ones. We've got the regulation like freezes, the environmental protection on construction freezes. Like
muffling scientists, starting to sound a bit Canadian there.
It's quite disturbing.
Building a wall.
Building the border wall. And now he's decided that torture's fine. Waterboarding
that's
is fine.
Apparently, this is interesting, because even Mattis, the Secretary of Defense nominee, and I can't remember that Pomano or something like that, the nominee for the CIA, I think both caught a bit off guard by him going like, yeah, no, torture's cool. Torture's cool. which is pretty incredulous that his choices are even like, wait, what? This is interesting, because, okay, let's just give Donald the benefit of the doubt here for half a second for the sake of this argument, right? So let's just say that there's enough merit in torture that it acts as an asset for national security. Let's just assume that for the sake of this argument. Let's also assume that you're okay with spending millions, potentially billions of dollars to maintain places like Guantanamo Bay and to pay people and to pay for electricity, all these things.
Yeah.
And let's just say as well that you don't care about your reputation internationally. And let's say as well that the people who take part in torture, the agents or the interrogators, are either psychopaths or else come out of it with PTSD somewhere down the line. Let's ignore all that for a second and say that if his plan is to fight ISIS like kind of fire with fire, but all the people in America who commit ISIS-related terror attacks, they were radicalized within America over the internet.
Yeah, and
how is torture going to solve the internet? Well, it doesn't make sense.
But the fact of the matter is, they've proven torture doesn't work. That it doesn't, torture doesn't increase the amount of information you get from people. So even if we ignore all ethical things,
it increases information, that doesn't make it any more accurate, perhaps.
Well, they're saying is you don't get more facts out of people by torturing them.
Because these people, you know, they're in this position where they're able to completely sacrifice themselves for this cause. You know, they've convinced themselves that they're a martyr and they're willing to go to the ultimate length for their cause, for their religion, for their new idea of a nation state. So it's like, of course, you know, it's like maybe you'll get some information, but at what cost? And like, what else are you getting from that? And what are you saying about America's values and that we hoped we had, you know, progressed from this, but it's such a regression.
It's insane. Because, yeah, like, again, even if you leave aside the ethics, which are absolutely appropriate, like, what is he expecting? To interrogate someone, they go, where did you meet your handler?
Craigslist.
Like, how is that solving anything? That is pure posturing. And unfortunately, if he goes along with it, that is going to seriously damage America's reputation and the lives of lots of innocent people, no doubt.
Absolutely. And I think the most ludicrous part about it is, do you know why they think it works? Because it works in movies and on television. Ugh. Like Jack Bauer tortures people on 24 and he gets the information. But it's just...
Do you honestly think that?
Where else have they seen it? Where else is it that you actually see any evidence of...
Yeah, presumably torture exists before television.
No, but of torture, like, creating successful information, like getting information out of people with torture. The only time you see that is in movies that it works.
Unless you have access to all of the CIA's information.
Or just like access to human history and you assume whether knowledge or not that at least some of them got it right.
What do you mean? Because there's examples of torture. Examples of witchcraft. That doesn't mean anyone got it right just because there's examples in history.
You're trying to rationalize it like that. So torture's existed long beyond television. Like,
yeah.
It's been a thing that people have done.
But why are people convinced that it works today?
Well, because clearly, at some level, they believe there's enough success to make it a national interest asset.
Because you're trying to assume that Trump watches the History Channel or reads a book, which I think is a ludicrous...
But people were doing that long before Trump, right?
You sort of said everyone's watching TV. I don't think 24 inspired people in the 1980s.
But it's a modern day example, well, a fairly recent example of that being done. And books... before that, and film and theatre, like, I just think it's something that's been done and seen to be effective, but only in the arts. It's not really, there's not, because there isn't any hard evidence in empirical studies that back it up.
I think it might honestly just be a reaction towards this, like, this fear and this hatred of liberalism and trying in any way to distance the new administration from that of Obama's. And even if, you know, Obama had more of a negative legacy in terms of, like, drone strikes than a lot of us are willing to admit, like, they just want to, you know, seem as contrary as possible and do, whatever it takes to fight ISIS and...
I don't think it's that. I think it's they want to, because he wants to say he's tough on immigration, economics, and security. And all his executive orders fall under those three banners. Yes, they affect the environment, but they weren't about the environment. Like, you know,
what about women's health?
Save money.
That's money. Ugh.
No, it's not pleasant.
No. But those are his three big things. Yeah. And so, he's just going to say, I'm better on security than Obama. That's why we're doing more background checks. It's all about security. But yeah, it's this slippery slope of like, you can just keep going until we're in 1984 and you've got a camera in everyone's house because it's for security. It's to protect you. And if you're doing nothing wrong, you've got nothing to worry about. And that argument just goes, you know, it's just slippery, slippery, slow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to break so we can drink some booze or something to get over this fucking Trump shit. And we'll come back. This is C.R. Avery, and this is Troubled Youth. There you go, that's appropriate.
I was a kid that wanted to change his name to MC Howlin' Wolf. I wanted to be, DJ Muddy Waters. I was simulating the harmonica sound. A Sonny Boy Williamson. While memorizing every dirty word of N.W.A. But deep down, I wanted to smell the gray area armpit of rock and roll. Never shy from a fight on a gig night. I stood steady and ready.
Yeah.
There we go, that's Program with Like the Sun from a torrid marriage of logic and emotion. And before that
something we all experience every day of our lives.
All right, Miss Morrissey over there. and we followed C.R. Avery with Troubled Youth. All right, so our next topic for tonight, we might have talked about this before, we can't remember, but it came up in tonight's show, so we thought we'd at least rehash it, is cultural appropriation. Is it a thing that we should be concerned about? Is it something that is a real problem? What do we think? What do we think?
Well, history teaches us that so far, and for many reasons, which include imperialism, colonialism, empirism, the world has been moving from small communities, lots of small communities, a plurality of tiny communities, into bigger and bigger and bigger, but fewer blocks of civilizations. I mean, from tribes to nation-states or city-states to nations to nation-states to empires, and now we've got kind of what we have now, building towards like the UN or the EU or more bigger blocks. So in a way, each of those tribes we eventually began with had some kind of culture, had some sort of traditions, beliefs, and over time, not that it's a good or bad thing, but just like this is how it's worked so far, those beliefs have been forgotten, they've been adopted, they've been dismissed by the power that eventually claims each one of those smaller cultures.
Yeah, but before we go any further, that's kind of, you know, I like to point out that that doesn't necessarily mean that the culture was static before that either, before the rise
that's
of imperialism.
True. That's
like,
true. Yeah.
Culture is, as we said in the sketch, it's fluid and yeah. throughout time, and you can take snapshots of it, but that's all they are. That's just at this very moment in time, you can say this was the language, this was the yeah. customs.
But I mean, but part of that is because. Since history is moving this way, and that's not to say it's good, but because history is moving that way and it is all we know essentially, that is what contributes in a certain sense to that flux, is that the changing circumstances of the geopolitical realms of all these different cultures and tribes are shifting in part because of that.
Yeah.
So they're definitely interrelated, and it's a good point to make.
Also, I just think like it's important to note that cultural identity is fluid too. I think especially because there's more movement of peoples around the world, I think, than there's ever been before. And you have people like you guys who are third culture kids, and you were born in England but lived around the world, and now you're here. And there's when you're in a very cosmopolitan city like Vancouver, you're confronted with people from I say confronted the perhaps more negative word than I mean. I love the fact that Vancouver is so multicultural. One of the reasons I came here. But people are sharing all these wonderful different traditions and cuisines and values, and you have the opportunity to have that like great sort of cultural mixing. And I think it's a real shame when people get so offended about someone appreciating your culture and wanting to share in that. And it's a really sort of hard line to tread when between appreciation and appropriation. And I'm always cautious of that as someone who's Caucasian and who wants to learn more about other cultures and learn more about other people. And like a thing that I'm very passionate about as someone who studies international relations and loves learning languages and loves talking to people from around the world is that I'm really interested in learning about different cultures and in, you know, kind of seeing where they differ from mine. But I hate to kind of feel very cautious that I'm like trying to steal from their culture or that kind of thing. So that's where I find cultural appropriation gets into a tricky realm.
Yeah, because of course there's blatant examples of what, you know, really amounts to racism that people might call cultural appropriation, such as the Washington Redskins and their name, which is a derogative term and therefore is, yeah, offensive. And like but that's not about cultural appropriation. That's just about being, you know,
basically being a racist.
Yeah, being racist, yeah. Having an offensive name,
or having an ironic name.
Yeah,
that's racist.
I think it would be useful if there was some sort of database of like determining on like what spectrum is what is appropriate for, and like perhaps a lot of people can use common sense to determine this, but often, you know, perhaps someone might just go way too far in the direction of being crazy offensive, and someone might hold themselves back from trying to participate in or learn from another culture because they're afraid of being offensive or appropriating.
But I don't think you can draw up a list of what is offensive and what is not. That's not how we don't live in that sort of society. We live in a capitalist society. So what you would do is you vote with your money, which is that you refuse to spend money with the Washington Redskins until that's how you get people to change their name. Just shouting about it, yes, may work through social pressure and things like that with enough force, but clearly that hasn't worked there. And it is. I don't think it's the most effective. Like as I've said before on this show, we can vote much more effectively with our wallets nowadays than we ever could with our actual votes. You know, anything you buy, if you does have a knock-on effect in many different ways. And so, yeah, if you buy things that aren't abusing people and animals and resources.
That's a whole thing we could get into.
Yeah,
here.
I mean, and there's a lot. There is a lot of different ways, but you know, all it takes is just to keep your ears open, and you hear something. Like you hear that Nestle likes to give out like free samples of breast milk to people in poor countries, like fake breast, formula. Okay. Yeah. Basically, they give it long enough that women stop producing breast milk naturally, and then the free runs out and they have to pay for it and they can't afford it. Like, that sort of really shady, disgusting tactics. So I don't buy Nestle, anything made by them.
Sorry, not to be picky. What does that have to do with cultural appropriation?
My point is we're talking about how to change sort of people's opinions and ideas in the world and how you create change
and
through purchasing
power. And so people
who
are upset about their culture being appropriated...
No, we've gone on to a different, similar, like related but different topic. It's not directly related to cultural appropriation. We're talking about
how you get changed.
Yeah, but in a way it is related in that we're saying like one way you could change the Washington Redskins is by not spending money with the Washington Redskins.
But even you said that's racist. That doesn't really have much to do with cultural appropriation. So
we've gone off cultural appropriation. Well, we agreed. What the hell else are we going
to
talk?
No, there's a lot of interesting things.
Yeah, I mean, we could keep talking about it, but clearly we're on a different topic. But yeah, we can go back to that.
Well, just to build off what Sierra was saying, then you agree with that. Yeah, the problem with cultural appropriation is the question becomes, who is the gatekeeper? Who is the person representative of a culture that says, here's what's good, here's what's not? And that person, whether explicit or implicit, has a power vested in their community that's given to them by the community, whether that's a representative or a figure, perhaps like a tribal chief. And then the question becomes, like, what is their interest truly in their culture, or is it their own power? And then there's all these things.
Yeah,
because like,
you just get people like Al Sharpton, and like he seems to be for promoting African American causes, but there's also, it just seems like he wants to get his face on TV.
Yeah, and there's ways in which there's lots of cultures. Do you want to share with them? I remember here we had the UBC Holi Festival, so the Hindu Holi Festival last year, and there was I think me and Sarah went and had a lot of good
fun.
They
do it every year.
Yeah, it's a cool ceremony. It's really interesting to get into a part of different culture. And there's a letter written to the UBC, the school newspaper, that said that this is pretty shameless cultural appropriation. All these white people here taking selfies.
Of course,
because
we go
like
to
that.
School at UBC.
But it's funny, so they wrote this letter in, there's published in the UBC, and a response letter came from the UBC, I think it may be South Asian or Indian club, who hosted it and said, hey, we're the hosts. Like, we genuinely want to share our tradition, our festival, our identity with others. Like, we don't care people taking selfies, but we want people to be there to understand.
And exactly, like, that's the, I think that's such a great move for that club to have taken, because the way that I think you overcome discrimination and, not overcome, but you can, like, build positively upon it and try and move away from that is you share your culture with other people and you show them that it's not threatening. And I think, like, a lot of the reason you have some radicalized people in the States who are very, very scared of Muslims is because they haven't grown up with having, like, Muslim friends around them as
kids.
Yeah,
or even just proper religious education. Like, in Britain, we're not just taught about Christianity in schools. They teach you about all religions, so you have a basic idea, like, why does that guy carry a sword with him? Like, things like that.
And so if you can
why does he carry a gun? He's American.
If you can see the happy, good, wonderful parts of a culture, rather than just the radicalized, scary things you see on television and make assumptions about, I think that's such a good step to take, and it can show you, you know, that these people are your equals and that they're humans too, and that you can all just kind of,
Yeah, totally. All right, guys, that is 10 o'clock. Thanks for being here. We will be back next week with some more sketch comedy, so stay tuned then. And we're going to leave you tonight with an awesome track by The Burning Hell. This is Fuck the Government from Public Library. Seems appropriate after our discussions tonight. See ya.
It was a wet and slushy, slushy winter day. Met at the New Year's party of my vegetarian friend.
I said I was studying English.
I told you I was in a band.
I asked what the band was called.
I said it's called The Burning Hell.
I said I've never heard of you.
I said that's probably just as well. Just to make conversation, I told you about a dream I had in which Jean Baudrillard was rapping with Public Enemy shouting, don't believe the hyper real, with Flava Flav and Chuck D.
And I said I think we might have a lot in common then, possibly because I'm also a musician.
also a student of hip-hoposophy.
You mentioned you used to play the clarinet in high school in the early years of the millennium when you were young.
And you said you're hired, the pay is negligible, and the tour starts next month.
You asked what I was working on. I said, I'm writing an album of love songs.
I laughed and said, love songs are dumb.
And I said, yeah, wait till you hear these ones.
Pass the wine, fuck the government, I love you. Three statements overheard at once in the crowded room. But I could not be sure which one had come from you.
So I passed you the wine and said, yes, fuck the government, I love you too.